to the Beef Watch Podcast. I'm Aaron Berger, a Nebraska Extension educator. For today's Beef Watch Podcast, we're going to be discussing an article from Oklahoma State University in the December 15th issue of the Cow-Calf Corner Newsletter. The title of the article we're going to discuss, Finding Forage Efficient Heifers. To have a conversation about the content, I'm joined today by Dr. David Lalleman. Thanks for joining me today.
Yeah, I appreciate you having me once again, Aaron. Thank you.
Dr. Lalleman, I really have appreciated the research that you've been doing over the last several years, looking at ways we might find forage efficiency in beef cattle, finding cattle that are effective at converting forage into pounds of beef. So before we dive into the article and the content there, tell us a little more about your research and your interest in this area.
Well, that's a good description of it. Really, the industry started making progress on feed efficiency, as near as I can tell, Aaron, somewhere we're getting close to 30 years ago now. Maybe it's 25, maybe it's 30. But anyway, the industry's had since the development of individual animal intake systems about that time. You know, the industry has made good use of those, and we've made some progress. However, the reason we got interested in the idea of more of a strict forage diet and efficiency related to cattle in those environments, strict forage environments, is because, you know, there's limitations to what you can learn from an intake facility. Such as whether it be a GrowSafe system or a C-Lock smart feed system, or in our case here at Oklahoma State and several other universities, they have a Incentech feed intake system. So three different companies that produce those individual animal intake technology, and they all kind of have similar limitations, and that is to feed a forage diet in those is extremely difficult, or you might consider it to be extremely labor intensive, because you can imagine, you know, that most of the diets that are fed to test cattle for growth and feed intake and eventually efficiency are, I'd say, moderate energy dense to sometimes higher energy dense diets with quite a bit of concentrate and some amount of forage. They're usually have wet ingredients so that they're relatively dense, and they, you know, you can get a lot of pounds in that relatively small bunk that are used in those different technologies. You put like a square bale of hay, small square bale of hay in one of those feed intake units, and you're going to have a mess, right? Because those cows will, they'll pull it apart and fluff it up, and then they'll start shoving it out into the feed alley. And so you really have to improvise and or feed several times a day in order to, you know, track intake on forage. It's just really labor intensive and just doesn't work very well with a forage system. So knowing that there wasn't any of that going on in the industry, really, we decided that we would make that our focus here several years ago, and have been working on it for, 6 years now. And I think starting to make some progress.
Yeah, I've really appreciated the work that you've been doing. And also you're asking the question, is there a correlation between feed intake, feed efficiency, as we look at some of these more high concentrate diets versus a forage-based diet? And share with us just a bit about the research that you've done there, the literature review, and what you found.
Yeah, so, you know, the two components would be the animal's performance, or in other words, if you're just talking about growing cattle, that would be just weight gain. And then the other component that we'd need to sort of rank animals for efficiency would be feed intake. And so we conducted several experiments when we launched this focused effort, where we fed the same group of cattle a forage diet for a period of time, and then one of these concentrate diets. And we used a diet that would be very similar to a lot of the bull test rations that are fed in national cattle evaluation. And, you know, we did two studies where we looked at forage feeding period first, gave the cattle an adaptation period. At the end of the forage intake period, we gave the cattle an adaptation to gradually switch the diet over to that bull test type ration. In other words, more energy dense diet, more concentrate feed. And then we tested the cattle again for their intake and performance in that concentrate diet. So two of the studies were designed that way. Two of the experiments we did with mature cows, we did what we call a crossover design. And that's where half the cattle started on the concentrate diet and the other half of the cattle started on the forage diet. And I should clarify, when I say forage diet, in our case and these studies that we've conducted, we're talking about grass hay and mineral. You know, a lot of the publications that you see in the journals that might be titled as a forage-based diet might be like corn silage or corn silage and alfalfa silage, something like that, which is doesn't have a lot of concentrate in it, but pretty high quality diets. In our case, we focused on grass hay, and you know we do, and we have used relatively nice quality grass hay. So Bermuda grass hay is a resource we have here in the Southern Great Plains, and so we've used good quality Bermuda grass hay, but it would be in the neighborhood of give or take 60% TDN and 12% protein. So high enough protein that we've not had to feed supplemental protein concentrate source. So that's kind of how we've gone about it. But anyway, back to the experiments we've conducted in those two cow studies, we half the cattle started on concentrate, half started on forage. And then we'd give them an adaptation period and switch their diet. So the reason for doing that was we were concerned that, you know, always starting cattle on forage first and then finishing up with concentrate, you know, the cattle might be re-ranking based on how well they did in the forage period. You know, so the cattle that didn't do very well during the forage period might really bounce back and have compensatory growth during that concentrate period. You would expect that. But as it turns out, in the two experiments that we conducted with that crossover design, it did not matter. It did not matter which diet they started on. We always got the same answer. And the answer has been across these four experiments that we've conducted and three other experiments that I've found that fit very well with those objectives. So seven studies in total. And it's interesting, Aaron, they all say the same thing. And that is that the intake, the feed intake, the ranking for feed intake in a contemporary group is positive and moderate to high correlation. So if they're big eaters on the forage diet, they're generally big eaters on the concentrate diet. And the other, you know, just the opposite, you know, cattle that don't eat very much are most of the time also cattle that, on the forage, most of the time are also cattle that don't eat all that much on the concentrate diet. Now, it's not been a perfect correlation. You know, it's ranged from about 0.43 to about 0.75. Now, those are phenotypic correlations. There's only one genetic correlation published that we could find that kind of fits this, and that was a French paper where they measured intake on a corn silage diet versus a strict hay diet. And the genetic correlation in that experiment was 0.83, which is really high, you know, genetic correlation. So from that, Aaron, that's a lot of description to just say that the intake appears to be positive and moderate to high. We need more larger experiments with that genetic correlation, you know, to be super confident. But the idea that all of these seven studies suggest that there is a positive correlation tells me that, or at least, you know, the way we're interpreting that is that the genetic tools that are available today through the breed associations for feed intake should be useful in the long run to, you know, increase forage intake if that's what you want to do in your cow herd, control it or maintain it, or even reduce feed intake in a cow herd. We think they're useful for that purpose. The interesting thing is that the weight gain in those two environments, forage versus a concentrate-based diet, have not been correlated at all. And that is the case in all seven of those experiments. And that's usually kind of a surprise to most people, maybe that haven't looked at it this way, and certainly was to me when we, kind of got started in this research effort.
So I guess to summarize what I heard you say is that as we look at these studies, there's definitely a correlation between feed intake, whether cattle are on a concentrate-based diet or forage-based diet, but there's not a correlation in the efficiency of those cattle in terms of converting that feed to pounds of gain, meaning cattle that are efficient on a concentrate diet may not be efficient on a forage diet and vice versa. Is that
Yeah,
correct?
that's correct. They may not be good gainers. If they don't gain well on forage, they might gain really well on concentrate, or they might not gain very well on concentrate either. There's just no relationship.
Well, that leads me to our conversation that is the focus today around how do we find forage efficient cattle for our operations? Because the beef cattle production model is primarily based on forage-based systems where we're asking these cattle to go out and harvest forage. It can be low quality forage or higher quality forage, but that's the main focus of what we want a cow to effectively do. And this is really where I think your research, in my mind, starts to shed some light on how can we start to maybe better understand where we can focus our efforts. Share with us what you've found and then also how you can help producers utilize this information to make decisions.
So in the article you mentioned, we just shared data from one contemporary group, and it's a very simple graph that's included in that article, and it shows that contemporary group's each individual animal's hay intake, and then also each individual animal's average daily gain on the vertical axis. And so from that graph, you can kind of see where what the point is here, and that is that in every contemporary group we test, we find females, or these are replacement heifers that we're testing every year, and we always find a group of heifers that just basically cannot or do not gain well on a strict forage diet. And again, they're getting grass, hay, and mineral. Generally, those heifers will gain around 1 pound a day consuming that strict forage diet. And we'll always have a group of heifers that don't gain beyond about 4/10 a pound a day. And usually we'll have two or three heifers down there around zero or even losing a little weight throughout that entire 70-day testing period. And, the way I interpret that is that those cattle that are demonstrating to us that they cannot perform well on a strict forage diet are basically telling us they really have no business becoming a cow. And then at the other end of that spectrum, we'll have quite a few heifers that gain well beyond 1 pound a day on a strict forage diet, and quite a few heifers that gain 1.2, 1.4. I think probably the highest we've had is around 1.6 pounds a day. Now that's not going to impress anyone compared to concentrate based diet weight gain, but just considering they're just consuming hay, that's really good. And we think those cattle that can perform well on that hay diet and not eat too much or eat too little, I think that could be a problem as well. Those are the animals that have moderate forage intake and we'll call it acceptable weight gain, are the cattle that should be considered as forage efficient females that can make profitable cows going into the future.
One of the questions that comes to mind for me, do you have a number of years of research of these heifers? And then have you followed up with these heifers as they become mature cows? Do you see this correlation trending out over time?
We're just getting to that point. In fact, I have a student right now that is analyzing a 5-year data set where we've been testing these contemporary groups of replacement heifers each year now for 5 years. And so she is just getting that analysis put together. And so we'll have some of that data soon. As you know, Aaron, it takes quite a few numbers to get a good handle on reproductive efficiency. we've got a pretty good idea in terms of, their performance and their feed intake already. And what we see, I'll just mention that, what we see in terms of if, well, I don't know, we could talk about this all day probably, Aaron, but it depends on what how you want to define efficiency, right? We can use residual feed intake, we could use feed to gain, gain to feed, and or we could use residual average daily gain, so on and so forth. And that's been kind of fun evaluating those different indexes to sort of rank cattle for efficiency. And we can talk about that more if you'd like to, but yeah, we're seeing really interesting and some very efficient cattle and some very inefficient cattle in every contemporary group we test.
Let's go there a little bit because I think this is very interesting to me as we think about what are cattle we want to select for. And I think what you said earlier, we may not want cattle that have huge amounts of intake. And yet, on the other hand, we don't want cattle that don't eat very much because we are dealing with a forage-based diet. And the ability of that cow to go out and harvest adequate amounts of that forage to meet her nutrition requirements and then reproduce is pretty important.
Yes. Yeah. So far, I mean, so let's talk. We'll maybe start off with residual feed intake as an index. And we've sorted our cattle that way, after the fact. And this big data set on the heifers, 5 years of data. That's one of the indexes we are using to evaluate it. Intake, let's say if you divide each contemporary group into efficient, moderate and inefficient classifications. So far, on average, our efficient versus inefficient, so the two extremes, would have, oh, somewhere right around 18 to 20% lower forage intake in the efficient classification, with equal body weight gain, equal body weight, I shouldn't say equal, but no, not statistically different, if that makes sense within each classification. But definitely a big difference in feed intake, 18 to 20% lower. And so, if that continues through mature cow phase, then you should be able to increase the stocking rate on the same land base by 18 to 20%. But your question is a really good one, and that is, do you always want to select for the quote efficient cattle that don't consume as much? And we see in the residual feed intake results, we see quite a few animals that would concern me about their ability to be productive long term, maintain their condition, as they turn into 4, 5, 6, 7 year old cow. There's quite a few heifers that make the efficient ranking because they eat very little. Now, they might also gain very little, but they consume very little feed, and that sort of outweighs the lack of acceptable weight gain. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it
And
really
so,
does.
you get some poor performing animals, is what I'm trying to say, that rank as efficient using RFI.
So what I hear you saying is we're probably really looking for something that's in the middle. We want some
Yes.
forage efficiency, but we also need that animal to have adequate gain and performance to convert that forage and be thinking about they're going to go out and harvest this. They need to be able to take in enough to meet their needs, but then also perform.
Yeah, and I think that is our challenge, is to figure out practical ways for producers to find these cattle that consume moderate amount of forage and perform extremely well. In other words, are very productive, not only their yearling year, but from then on. And I think we're sort of beginning to figure that out. And that's one weakness of residual feed intake as an index, is you've got to have a threshold for what you're willing to accept for performance, just like you mentioned. Those cattle need to be able to gain weight, gain body condition, maintain body condition, even if they eat very little. In fact, I think eating very little. And you asked earlier, Aaron, if you know what data we've got as these animals turn into to mature cows. We're just getting to that point. But right now, it does appear that maybe the efficient cattle are just a little bit lighter than the cattle that classify as inefficient during that replacement test period, replacement year test period. So they're a little bit lighter. Probably don't have enough data yet to be able to say whether or not maybe the efficient females, since they eat less, are able to maintain their body condition as well as the inefficient cattle and classified as inefficient because they do eat more. We'll get there within the next year or two, I think, and be able to talk more about their ability to maintain their condition. But I'm fairly confident that those, you know, as you mentioned, their consumption is related, pretty strongly related to their body composition. And I think we could definitely overdo it in the low intake direction, meaning not maintain performance or productivity because the cattle consume too little feed. So not only is overconsumption a problem or a challenge, but so is underconsumption. And so that's why I think, yeah, moderate intake and the cattle that are capable of demonstrating really good productivity or performance on a forage diet is where we need to head. And by the way, I'm not suggesting that we ignore post-weaning feed efficiency or, you know, carcass quality or anything like that. We can do this with the tools we have available today. We can do this and improve on forage utilization efficiency and continue to improve on the post-weaning phase of the industry as well. I don't think one is exclusive to the other.
Well, I think that's an excellent point. I also think I want to circle back to what you talked about earlier, though. Many of the bull test type scenarios we have today, in terms of where cattle are efficient there, selecting for bull test efficiency may not correlate to forage efficiency and their resulting heifer offspring.
Yeah, you know, that seems very apparent in the work or the results that we have up to this point. And again, it's mostly connected to the weight gain piece, not as much to the feed intake piece, but certainly the weight gain piece. It overpowers the feed intake piece because there is a pretty good relationship in feed intake between those two environments. There is no relationship in their ability to perform under those two environments. And I wonder if, you know, maybe in a lot of the seed stock operations, you know, it's really difficult to market cattle that are in a body condition score 4 or body condition score 5, right? They need to look the part in order to have a, you know, maintain a good market there, and I get that. But I think maybe in modifying the environment so that the cattle are in a good condition all the time, or the heifers are developed to 65 or even 70% of their expected mature weight, you sort of cover up their lack of ability to perform on forage. Does that make sense?
Yes, it really does. And I think that ties into what you talked about in the article for producers who are thinking about building the cow herd, retaining replacement heifers, developing replacement heifers. You kind of give some, I think, good guidelines in terms of how can you use this now? Obviously, folks are commercial setting are not going to have individual feeding systems. That's not going to be an option. But how can they apply pressure to hopefully begin to select for those heifers that will make cows that are more forage efficient?
Yeah. So first let me give you my nerdy university researcher method and then we'll talk about what people are probably already doing and maybe making progress in this area and just maybe not thinking of it the same way I'm thinking of it. But so if you want to be real specific about making progress in this, I think all you need is a scale and a period of cattle scales to weigh them in a period of time where you can turn those cattle out on moderate quality forage, or maybe for some people, the more practical thing would be just to feed hay, grass hay. You need a 70 to 100 day period, so maybe that's sometime after weaning, long before, their first breeding season. But just whatever period of time would be convenient for that operation to weigh cattle on a good quality, a calibrated scale, turn the cattle out for 70 to 100 days, either on the hay diet or on the standing forage diet that's moderate in quality. And then 70 to 100 days later, get those cattle back in and, early in the morning so that they have kind of a semi-shrunk conditions. And by the way, obviously that needs to be applied up front and at the end of this little gain test period, and weigh those cattle again. And then you're probably going to find some heifers that you're disappointed in their performance during that moderate quality little test. And I think those are females that make great candidates to get to the livestock market and become feeder heifers, and probably have no business becoming cows, because I think they're telling you that they're not going to perform very well as a cow on a strict forage diet. So that's if you want to be real specific about it, and you're interested enough, or maybe you want to make it a piece of your, marketing replacement heifers to share with people that you have tested them for forage performance. But other people are probably already challenging their females using a lower input heifer development program, including, not targeting 65 to 70% of their expected mature weight. In other words, a nutrition program that will accomplish higher level of weight gain and higher level of body fat composition and so on. But challenging those heifers to perform well on a moderate quality forage diet, and then maybe even using a shorter breeding season and retaining only those heifers that conceive early in that shorter breeding season and moderate to lower input development system. I think cattle that ace that test, Aaron, are probably cattle that are telling us, yes, they are capable of performing in that forage environment.
Dr. Lallman, anything else you'd highlight for producers, things to think through as they think about how do we find cattle that fit our resources, especially as we think about forage-based systems?
Well, the other piece that we haven't really spent as much time talking about, we talked about performance and how producers can practically get at that now. The other piece is, what about intake? Because if the concern is, if you always select for the heifers that really perform well, you might just be increasing intake genetically over time in your herd. And so I think at this point in time, my guidance to producers would be to simply use those breed association dry matter intake EPDs that are available, and they're available in quite a few of the breed associations now. And my encouragement to seed stock producers would be, and to commercial producers, I guess, would be, purchase females from, or consider prioritizing purchase of females from people who are testing for feed intake, because they'll have a more rapid increase in the accuracy of the EPDs of the animals in their herd. But I think for now, anyway, the guidance on how to control intake or appetite over time in a cow herd is to utilize those EPDs on the herd sires that they select, and obviously moderate dry matter intake EPD. Moderate meaning, somewhere in that, I don't know, middle of that breed association's percentile for dry matter intake, would be one great way to, over the long term, control appetite in the cow herd.
Dr. Lallman, I guess from what I've heard today is that to stay out of the ditches, so to speak, on either
Yeah.
end,
Yeah,
we
good way to say it.
kind of need to be moderate in terms of what we think about in terms of intake, but then also moderate in terms of what we think about maybe in terms of even gain. So maybe we don't want super high gaining animals or really low gaining animals, but something kind of in the middle there as we think about forage and forage efficiency.
That's an interesting point, and I don't mean to drag your session out here long, but we didn't talk about residual average daily gain as an efficiency index. But that's really interesting to think about. And will those cattle that have high RADG, meaning are able to perform very well on a forage diet, will they become bigger, mature cows that consume more feed? And I think that's absolutely true, as Monte Curley's data from the University of Missouri would show. An RADG is, I mean, it is basically going to lead to larger mature animals over time, and therefore more feed intake. But if you restrict these cattle, I say restrict them, if you put them on a moderate quality forage diet and they gain faster, are they going to become larger? Is that also a strong genetic correlation to mature body weight? I don't know. That's a really good question, one we're really interested in, because I actually think the RADG, if the cattle are tested in a forage environment, is probably a better index of, to indicate a cow that's going to be able to be productive and maintain her body condition score in the future. But we need to know. We have to know if that also means they're going to be getting bigger. And so, we're just going to continue to have to deal with that antagonism of forage intake and mature body weight.
Dr. Lallman, I really appreciate your time today. Anything else you'd like to highlight or parting thoughts as we point towards wrapping up?
No, I thank you for the invitation and sharing this with your audience.
Well, again, I really appreciate the research you've been doing there. I think very unique research, as you said, really has not been done. And so I think it's bringing to light some really important questions, I think, that you're starting to get answers to, but also then, of course, raising additional questions, which is why we do research. So again, thanks for your time today and appreciate what you're doing there.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Well, for more information on the article that we did discuss in today's Beef Watch podcast, again, you can find this article. It's in the December 15th issue of the Cow-Calf Corner newsletter. Again, that's a newsletter put together by Oklahoma State University.